Hello, people of the world. Today is April 23rd, and you are listening to my 10th podcast of the year. It's kind of a minor milestone for me because honestly, I did not think I would get past the first podcast episode. The first one I ever did was back in June of 2018, and then I actually had my second podcast episode this semester of 2019, spring of 2019. So I'm not counting the June 2018 podcast. So this is technically, for me, the 10th podcast I've done. And the 10th podcast I've done for 2019, which was one of my goals to finish 10 podcasts. And not all of them were good, of course, but if you listen to one of my later or my earlier episodes, I talked about the importance of being a disciplined half-ass, because it's better to be a disciplined half-ass than to be a perfectionist who doesn't get anything done. Obviously, if you talk about reality versus imagination, someone who imagines great things, you know, it's great that they have great big dreams, but they're no better than the person who completes poor projects. You know, if I ask you, who's the better artist, the artist who dreams of great art or the artist who actually draws and makes art, albeit not, you know, not amazing art, but the artist who actually creates art, who's the better artist? Well, obviously, the person who's actually created something, and eventually that person will get better. Or ideally they will, the more they create. So anyways, that's my little quick spiel for this podcast. But let's get on to the topic of discussion today, which is a kind of a minor review of Malcolm Harris's book, Kids These Days. So Malcolm Harris is a, you know, he's a millennial and he's a freelance writer who actually lives in Philadelphia. And his book, Kids These Days, basically talks about the millennial generation, the young generation. He talks about youth and the future of youth in terms of economics, society, political frameworks. And I basically read snippets of his book for my philosophy class, but what I really wanted to talk about was his conclusion to the book. If I just want to pull up my notes real quickly. So the notes I have in the conclusion of the book, he talks about what he says as seven slow motion disasters. So seven slow motion disasters for basically the youth, the young generation. And I'm going to pinpoint each of these seven in this podcast. So let's start with number one. Okay, so number one, the first slow motion disaster that Malcolm Harris talks about is what he says, human capital contracts. So what is human capital? Well, capital is money. Capital is money, or what we use as a platform of power to get things done. And mainly that's money in economics. But also, if you really think about it, humans are the other end of what gets things done, because humans actually do the things that are being done. Of course, he does mention, you know, autonomous and robotics in the future, which is another topic he mentions in the book. But what this slow motion disaster is, human capital contracts. So what does that mean? It's kind of creating contracts with people for capital. He says giving upfront money or loans to people in return for future percentage of income. This is kind of a win-win situation because this is targeted more for students. And people giving these loans would give better interest rates than student loans, so this would be better for the borrowers. Plus, if you're giving upfront money to, you know, dedicated students, students who have passions and actually have projects they want to complete but just need capital, this will help the economy because the upfront money they'll be granted, well, then they can pursue their business opportunities or whatever, research or whatever, and actually continue their education. So people creating these human capital contracts, right now it's kind of flat in terms of everyone gets the same contract. But in the future, what if discrimination happens? As in, what if you're giving a Harvard student a loan in return for 1% of their future lifetime income? And then the person at Boston University gets a loan, same amount of loan, let's say $100,000, but they have to give 5% of their future income. And then the University of Maryland student gets a $100,000 loan for 10% of their future income. Now, the specifics of the loan and the income, whatever, aren't, you know, entirely mentioned in by Harris. But what he says is, what happens to that bottom half of the people making these human loan, human capital contracts? And then he says, what if, you know, just college students who are kind of set to fail in their business opportunities, who don't have the resources or who didn't have the upbringing, and they have to promise, you know, upwards of 15%, 20%, 50% of their income. And he says these are subprime human capital contracts. You're giving, it's really predatory loaning in a sense. You know, these companies who want to offer great loans to students in return for their future income, but they're giving loans to people who are set to fail. And it's called subprime, just like 2008 subprime mortgage crisis, where people, businesses were making money off commission by giving loans and mortgages to people to buy homes. But these people could never, they were set to fail. They were never going to pay back these mortgages. But the companies made money by how many mortgages they made based off commission and fees. So it's kind of a disconnect. So that's another, that's the first slow motion disaster he talks about. The second one he calls the professionalization of childhood. Now this one is a little grim. It's a little sad when I read it because it's a lot of truth. There's a lot of truth to this. The professionalization of childhood, which is telling a child in the future, of course this is a slow motion disaster. So telling a child in the future that they can't be anything they set their mind to. He says because we're going to grow up into a society where there's just too many children, there's too many people in this world, and not enough opportunities for everyone to be unique and everyone to be a superstar. There just aren't enough spots. And we're going to have to teach children to find a place in society rather than create their own place. You know, the American dream of being able to work your way up to the top, regardless of your situation, that in a way will slowly deteriorate. Of course, the American dream will always exist in some way, but the American dream now compared to the American dream in 50 years from now will be completely different depending on the perspective of how many people can actually achieve that. So he says, in the future, we won't even be able to tell a child that they can be anything they want, that they set their mind to, because that will sound ridiculous and not even a child will be able to believe it. And in a way, that's very true. Right now, we live in a unique situation. I think we all have a lot of privilege. I have a lot of privilege because I truly believe I can do anything I want to in life, because I have the privilege as long as I set my mind to it and work hard and work smart. But I'm not entirely sure if my children or my grandchildren will have the same privilege. Again, he says a lot of it will be due to automation and artificial intelligence and technology advancements, where the people who are most successful will stay successful, and it'll be harder for the middle class or the lower class, the lower middle class, to climb their way up and create their American dream and become unique. Plus, add on the fact that the population of the earth is growing, and just by that sheer numbers, you know, if there's going to be 10 billion people, 15 billion people on earth, it's harder for you to be unique. And he says that it's a little scary because he's afraid that a lot of jobs will just be servicing robots and servicing autonomous, artificial intelligently run technology. So yeah, that's the second Second, slow motion disaster dystopia. Third one is climate privilege. Climate privilege, which, you know, it's global warming is not. It's just a fact. The globe is warming. Climate change is happening, and if someone says otherwise, then just walk away from the conversation because they're, you know, living in ignorance, and it's, you know, Confucius and Confucian philosophy says to just not argue with people who aren't willing to accept facts and aren't willing to kind of live out of an ignorant life. But the globe is warming. You know, yesterday was Earth Day. Love the Earth. Love our Earth. It's our planet, and we only have one. But you know, global warming is a very real thing, and it's very, very true. And in that case, the statistic is that by 2100, the year 2100, the temperature will go from 3 degrees Fahrenheit to 12 degrees Fahrenheit, the average temperature. 3 degrees to 12 degrees Fahrenheit increase in temperature, which is going to be the average national temperature, regardless of what we do from now on, which is, it's a little bit grim. It is a very bit grim because it's basically saying it's inevitable. It is inevitable, but we can still do our part. But this isn't a spiel about how we can save the planet. This is a spiel about the slow motion disaster of the implication of climate privilege. So what happens in the future is we're going to have extremely hot summers and a prevalence of an exceptionally heavy rainstorms and hurricanes. There will be a 15% decrease in American snow cover and a foot increase in sea level and a decrease in coral production over 50%. That sucks. But what this situation will provide for us is that the very rich and wealthy will live in hospitable areas, and the poor will live on edges of hospitality. You know, the geography privilege is very prevalent right now. Based on where you are born, America or in a developing country, somewhere in Africa or Southeast Asia, will completely change your life. You know, if you're born in America, you are already bounds ahead of the rest of the world, regardless of what type of income family you're born into. And it's very true that geography plays a huge part on economic factors. If you look back at historical reasons, you know, geography, regardless of you know, being colonized by Britain or whether or not you were colonized or what type of culture or colony, what type of country you were, the geography of where you lived was a huge part based on, you know, temperature, climate of crops and agriculture and resources available. It's a huge part. And in the future, with this climate privilege, as climate change occurs more rapidly, the wealthy will privilege and being able to live in just better areas, not just in the world, but even within America, within Canada, where I'm from. So that's another slow motion disaster. That's the third slow motion disaster. Then the fourth slow motion disaster we have is called discrimination by algorithm. Discrimination by algorithm, which is kind of intuitive, but you know, last year we had a huge, Facebook had several huge scandals about data privacy and data targeting. You know, there's a question of, you know, how Amazon prices goods using their data. Do they target different races? There's no way to honestly know whether or not one item on Amazon is priced differently from another item that another person sees, compared to maybe a white person or a black person or Hispanic or Asian or Latino. Yeah. So discrimination by algorithm is a very real thing because algorithms don't care about hurting people's feelings. They only care about numbers. Facebook currently offers targeted ads, housing ads for black races, black people. And they offer, you know, lots of options for targeting ads based on race, sex, and discriminatory factors. And it'll get to the point where the algorithm almost doesn't even need to know what race or sex, gender or culture you come from. They'll eventually get enough data to be able to discriminate based on just other data sets, you know, maybe based on where you live, based on what type of food you prefer, based on what type of food you eat, your credit card transactions, your height. They'll be able to pinpoint whether you are, you know, a certain race, which is pretty scary. And discrimination by algorithm is a very, very real possibility. It's in fact happening on a large scale, but, you know, on a kind of underlying large scale way in America. Of course, Facebook, Amazon, Google, all these big tech companies, there's a lot of people in the government saying that they should be broken up because of how much power they have in terms of data. Discrimination, how do they ethically use their power and their data privacy, data discrimination methods. So antitrust policy is a huge part of economic policy. Now, before I talked about the fifth slow motion disaster, I'm going to say a quick word about my sponsor. All right, cool. Welcome back. So I'm going to talk about the last three slow motion disasters, starting with number five. Number five, Malcolm Harris talks about, is called the malfunctioning, which is basically based on kind of the past few things and based on population growth. Eventually, there will be so many people, an abundance of capital, that there just isn't enough room for everyone. And what he fears, Malcolm Harris fears, will create a dystopia, kind of Black Mirror world, is that institutions for people who simply just can't make it in society, air quotes on just can't make it in society, either academically, economically, socially, culturally, politically, all these factors, they just can't make it in society. Institutions will create, you know, camps for these people. He says he fears that there will be a quote, unholy combination of mental asylum and work camp, unquote. So authorities will break the perceptual distinction between being alive and just working. And there's going to be no more distinction. And it's a big fear, because it's, you know, right now, prisons, slavery is abolished in America, except for prisons, except for people who are in prison. So these people are being actually used by businesses for their labor and human capital. As mentioned again, human capital is a big theme about these slow motion disasters. So he fears that people who can't make it in society will then be put into this mental asylum work camp. You know, he fears that maybe inmates will simply be attached to some sort of soylent food thing and food machine, and put on an Oculus headset and just living like that. Or maybe they'll be given video games to play, and somehow those video games will be beneficial in some way. You know, he talks about Google, how right now Google, actually you can play asylum, let me just quote from what he says. So he says, giving asylum inmates games to play all day will seem generous. And if we can somehow extract value from their playing, the same way that Google uses CAPTCHA verification to gather street addresses for their maps program, then it's a win-win, at least compared to incarceration as it exists. But of course, this still sounds completely like some sort of Black Mirror episode where these people are just put into these camps and working and kind of not really living. And again, Malcolm Harris says, it is a big fear because these people won't be able to really know reality itself. And he says, kind of like in The Matrix, where this dystopia, reality itself will be a privilege. That is kind of a fearful dystopia future, where reality for some people isn't fully real. Reality itself is a privilege. Right now, that I think, regardless of what generation we live in, I think that is very true. And I'm glad that, you know, we, at least to some extent, we have more of a better understanding of reality, or we could all just be living in simulations like Elon Musk says, but hopefully not. Okay, so that's the fifth one, which is kind of grim as well. They're all pretty grim, but yeah, that's the fifth one, the malfunctioning, you know, institutions for people who can't make it. Sixth one is the misogynist backlash. Basically, hatred of women. That's what he fears. And it's a weird progression because, you know, women are losing rights, but then we have the waves of feminism starting in the 1900s. Now it's the 2000s, you know, women are still rising up, getting more rights, at least in developed countries. I know in, you know, America, we have lots of male politicians this year, which is great. Like Oscaria Cortez, I believe, is her name. Oh God, if I said it wrong, that would be pretty. Yeah, Oscaria Cortez, I believe, is her name. But she's one of the hot seats in the politics world. But you know, lots of more women CEOs, more women doctors, more women being educated, and it's really good for the economy because it's putting women in the workforce. But it's also making a shift in the culture. And what he fears is that as the job distribution and job polarization intensifies, as in more women will be taking jobs, which will displace other people, society will have a regression of this progression of feminism and will end up hating women. What he refers to is the hatred for Jews will shift to hatred for women. And that is very scary. It's a potential dystopia. It's a slow motion disaster. We might not even realize the shift happening. It's going to be a pretty awkward shift, you know, as we build progression, more progressive theories, and women finally are more equal rights. And then he fears that we'll regress from that and blame women in general for the potential dystopia future. The misogynist backlash, that's number six, he says. He does also mention that less educated people are less progressive. So I guess maybe the question is education, or the solution is education. So more education for everyone, all backgrounds, male, female, race, income. So maybe that's really one of the big solutions for a lot of things, bigger, more education. But yeah, misogynist backlash is number six. And number seven, he says, is the fully tracked slow motion disaster. This already happens. And I already talked about data privacy, but, you know, social media, data privacy, there's an abundant amount of tracking available. If you have an Instagram and you're public, if you have a Facebook, even if you're not public on Instagram and Facebook, there's ways to figure out where you've been, what you've eaten, where you go to school, where you live, your phone number, things like that. Our data is very much out there, and it's very scary because all of us can be tracked. You know, people talk about in China, there's CCTV, which surveillance cameras everywhere. You know, data privacy does not exist in China. If you use WeChat, which is their main platform, social media platform, over 1 billion users, if you use WeChat, a lot of people are afraid to say things about the government because it's pretty well known that the government tracks everything you say on social media, on websites, on platforms, on blogs. So yeah, it's very scary. It's a dystopia tracking world. In America, it's a little bit better, but data privacy is still, you know, Facebook last year had that scandal about the Cambridge Analytica scandal, whether their data was used for influencing political decisions during the Trump election. by Russians and stuff like that. And, you know, Fitbit trackers, iPhone GPS, Google, and all those big tech companies were put on the hot seat by politicians earlier this year and last year as well about data privacy. And what he says is he's afraid that the data self will approach the real self and become like kind of one blob, one kind of dystopian blob of humanity. He says, you know, health insurance companies right now offer free gym memberships. You know, if you're healthier, you're less likely to get in a health accident. It's a win-win situation for health insurance companies. But it's very hard. But the gym membership requires that you prove that you actually go to the gym, which is kind of a tedious process. But what if everyone was just offered Fitbit trackers and everyone were offered these tracking devices and everyone was tracked? It's a fully tracked world. Then everyone would be rushing to get their free gym memberships. Not only that, but everyone would also be in the system, as per se. And I think that's a kind of a bit of a scary thing to think about, which is why I think a lot of companies, rising companies, are offering kind of these getaway retreats, you know, retreats to the forest, you know, kind of going blackout in terms of technology. And I'd like to do one of those one day because I think it would be really refreshing in terms of getting away from everything. So yeah, those are the seven slow motion disasters Malcolm Harris talks about in his book, Kids These Days. Slow motion disasters, obviously meaning we might not know when it hits us, but it's coming and it's very prevalent. So just to recap, human capital contracts, number one. Two is professionalization of childhood. Three is climate privilege. Four is discrimination by algorithm. Five is the malfunctioning. Six is misogynist backlash. And seven is the fully tracked dystopia. Hopefully, we can solve some of these, prevent some of these. He does provide solutions, which is great in his book. He does provide solutions. I won't talk about them here in this podcast. I might actually do it in a future podcast because we all love solutions. It sucks to bring problems up and not provide some sort of solution. It brings grim perspectives because I'm just out here saying the seven worst things that's going to happen in our generation as our youth. But I will hopefully make a future podcast about the solutions that we as a society can make. We as the youth, you know, youth, the next generation, that what we can do and also what we can help inform future generations and past generations. So thank you for listening to this podcast. As I mentioned, it was kind of a minor milestone, my 10th podcast. I have been doing this weekly podcast pretty consistently. But yeah, thank you for joining me. And thank you for wanting to grok the world a little bit better, one podcast at a time. Have a good life. Bye.